That's why I'm all in bed. Nobody gives me sympathy.
Hello, and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Fallout, the popular game in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. I don't know what apostolistic is, but hi, I'm Weird. Welcome back. I just said Weird. Oh, this whole thing's a mess. It's all a train wreck. All right, play us in, Weird, before I keep screwing up.
Well, that, the previous voice speaking, was Fi. And this is Sir Weirdington Esquire. The one yeah. And only, as of about an hour ago. I had a busy morning.
Yeah. So if folks remember last time, we were dodging meta cops and losing audio. So we're back again. We're in the regular podcasting station. We're doing well. We're on to chapter 20. Yay, we made it. We're not dead yet. So, Weird, you should tell us what we learned last week.
Oh, do I have to? Oh,
yes, yeah. Yes, you do. You're contractually obligated.
Alright. Oh, besides the attack of the when the meta police struck us. Oh, wait, okay. So at the end of it, they got the Pip Buck upgraded. It evolved into its second form. More antlers than ever.
Yes. We're up to our eyeballs and antlers and memory orbs.
And they were able to find out that the Maltese.exe is a skeleton key to every automated function in the dilapidated pre-apocalypse empire. But it requires a genetic signature. Like, it can the spell to make someone new Supreme Sovereign can only be cast on somebody who is blood-related to one of the original
Ministry mayors, the princesses, or their extended family in some way.
How are they able to test that nobody on hand qualified for that? Or do they just assume that nobody on hand was qualified for that?
They just assumed. Since it specifically mentions that none of the Ministry mayors had any heirs, that, like, there's probably no way that they're related in any way.
I'm sure that's going to bite them in the ass. It's a real Ruby Slippers moment. You could have gone to Kansas at any time. And that was that's the only thing I recall.
The only other real thing that happened was what we're going to be continuing with chapter 20 Rampage snapping a child like a twig.
Yeah. The chapter more or less opens up with, hey, you know that Rampage killing babies. And, you know, Rampage womp womp, womp womp it up womp. You know me, baby killing. I don't like it, but I just do it. Like, it's, I don't doubt anybody when they like point a terrified accusing finger at me and shout baby killer. Like, I don't like it a lot, but I'm not gonna argue with it. And then
I have been known to kill a baby or two in my day.
Then we meet a very tall Lolita horse princess.
Yes, Lacuna, best girl.
There's a vanishingly few number of princess breed horses, and so
yes.
One wonders why they didn't, like, see if the super spell worked on her.
Yeah.
Whoops. all the characters in the story are very dumb.
Yes. The idiot ball is bolted to blackjack. Oh, also, we're also going back to Stable 99. That's the other
thing. Oh, no, I mean, that's... Okay, yeah. We're going to Stable 99 because for actually really poorly explained reasons. Like, they're trying to trace back where this spell might have been supposed to have been going to as it, like, bounced aimlessly around the entire Imperial network. And so in order to do that, they're going to trace back the steps of the places that the program deemed unworthy. Like, they're going to, like, their entire quest right now is seems logically like a massive waste of time. But I guess they don't have anything better to do with their lives.
Not really, no. I think that was basically our chapter. So I guess I get to tell you.
So we open up on a dead baby. Oh wait, what perk did we earn from?
We earned the perk. Give me one moment to look one chapter back in my notes. Dealer's Ante, which gives her increased regeneration of sats when she kills things, I think is what it is.
Right. Okay.
Further cementing her as gun shoot horse. But yeah, so I will open up our chapter right up from the last one.
We open up on like now has a time of from 12 to 13 seconds. Dio's power grows ever greater by the day.
Yes, that is what's happening. But we open up on what like I'm really on the fence about defending because I think it's an interesting set piece, but it's kind of like muddied. So the entirety of this chapter is like punctuated with like interstitial scenes of Blackjack like basically digging a hole for Thorne's body and it like cutting back to the events as like that led up to this moment that's happening. And it's kind of a cool, interesting like use of non-linear storytelling to kind of like make your chapter feel more punchy and interesting. But like it gets kind of dumb later on, so we'll get back to that. But this chapter opens with her like sort of like impotently digging in the mud during a rainstorm to try and like carve out a small like casket space, I guess, for Thorne in the ground. But anyways, oh, hit my mic. That sucks. We rewind back to the moment on which Rampage fucking crushed Thorne. BJ has a major freakout moment. Obviously, she berates her for calling her a murderer. Beats Rampage into a bloody pulp, which of course doesn't stick because Rampage is made of rubber. She can just regenerate out of anything.
I take it Rampage was just obliging and allowing the beating to occur?
Yes. Yep. Because she's just crazy and whatever. But she gets bloody pulped and then she's kind of like, ha, what I did to her was a service. Like, she never would have survived in the waste. I did her a mercy, which is the name of the chapter as well. And it's kind of the big theme of this one. And she rambles a lot about like mercy killing and like sometimes it's the only option. And she pulls a whole "you're not so different, you and I" to Blackjack when she's like, it's like, oh, I had no choice. And Blackjack's like Rampage is like, see, I had no choice either. See, you killed in mercy as well, which is just goofy.
So I missed it. Was there anything like physically or mentally wrong with like Thorne? Like, is Thorne not like exceptionally
weak? She was upset because her mom's dead. Her mom was the slaver that got murdered a chapter ago.
All right.
She was upset, but she wasn't like debilitatedly upset. You know, Rampage is a complex and interesting character. No, she's not.
So okay. Is this the point at which Rampage is driven from the crew for the time being?
No. Give me a bit. No. give me a hot minute, though. I'm trying to queue up a particular, at least an interesting thing, at least from our weird meta conversations about the story. When she pulls the, when you mercy killed someone, BJ's like, you didn't have to kill her. I said desperately as we circled each other, my body suddenly feeling very weak and tired. There was nothing I could have done, relating back to the 40 fools being murdered. Of which Rampage responds, nothing really? Her voice lowered even more. Didn't stay with them, didn't help them, didn't find somebody who could, didn't devote yourself to doing everything possible to save them. Her questions slammed into me harder than her hooves as I backed away.
Horse Bull's been listening to our podcast.
Well, and then there's this paragraph. I thought my choice was lose-lose. I knew some of the children were crazy, but had I gone from pod to pod to find out for sure, could some of them have been saved? I thought the collegiate and society wouldn't have helped, but had I helped them? Had I dragged Archibald and Splendid, which were the characters, they're just out there to find out for sure there were no medics in the wasteland? Had I devoted my life to finding some way of saving these terrible innocents? Yeah, so yeah, Rampage has been watching our podcast. So I don't I don't.
That's like, a trick, though, Fi. Like, she's like, Horsepool is just trying to, like, play on your emotions directly, because, like, that doesn't excuse, like, I mean, I could.
This, well, this that lose-lose thing a... is. Well, that lose-lose line is Blackjack talking in her head. Like.
Yeah, I know. But I'm also now currently amused by the idea of a villain who, like, tries to teach, like, sort of, like, sappy moral lessons in the worst, wrongest way possible. Like, like a deeply, like, sociopathic, murderous Mr. Rogers.
God.
Now, Susie, now that I've strangled your older brother in front of your eyes, don't you have a stronger appreciation for the value of life? Doesn't your dispute over ownership of that doll seem so insignificant now that his corpse is rotting in front of you?
Jesus. Yeah, I wish that was sort of the case. It's just, it's much dumber and lamer is what it actually is. But yeah, no, it was kind of a weird moment of like, wait, does Sombra realize that, like, this was wrong? Like, have I been wrong? And, like, I know I'm not wrong, but, like, it's very clearly just later on you realize that, like, that seems kind of fucked up. It's still used in a multiple instances to, like, make the main character suffer over dumb bullshit. Like, over forced tension and forced drama. But, like, I don't know, it's kind of just funny that, like, oh, wait, I guess even Sombra realized this was kind of fucked up and stupid. This added nothing. Anyways, I'm gonna keep going on. For this scene. Put a pin in it, I guess.
How the scene goes in.
Yeah. Yeah, put a pin in it. We'll do an on-scene transition. The not so different you and I speech kind of rattles BJ, so Rampage ends up getting the upper hand on her for a little bit. Glory swoops in, calls her a bitch, and then lasers her into ash. Which, I mean, is the first time Glory has done anything of significance in the story, so...
Yeah, good on her.
But yeah, she vaporizes her into ash, and they're like, well, I guess that's settled. And then they find that, like, Rampage has, like, a little, like, egg in her ashes, and as they're confused by that, like, it magics up, and then, like, Rampage, like, reforms, like, starting from, like, skeleton... two more complex up out of the ashes, but she regenerates as a small child for some reason. But the good news is that apparently she's out of her weird fugue state, and she's like, oh damn, I did it again, didn't I? Well, she says it more remorsefully than I did, but she admits that apparently she has blackouts from time to time, and she like doesn't know what happens in them, and then people just die without a recollection.
A likely story.
I mean, it's actually true. Like, it's bullshit what it is, but, like,
sound like a likely, so like, especially the convenience of, in regards to, like, everything talked about before, she regenerates as a small child. And so, like, yeah. it just, I don't know, I'm reminded of the Team 4-Star take on Alucard from Helsing. Like,
yeah.
This seems like an Alucard move, like... Meh, 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 don't kill babies. Well, what if I'm a baby?
Nah, it's much, much stupider than that. Because they're just like, oh, like they posit the ideas like, oh, maybe you have like an alternate personality. And then they ruminate on that for a while. Like, it's a weird moment where Glory's like, well, I don't think, like that's not really how, like, alternate personalities work. So, like, it's got to be some magic bullshit that's making that work. We're getting into some goofy 90s anti-hero bullshit with Rampage. It is basically what's setting up for. Like, I'm not going to go into too much detail.
Well, as long as you're going to be cruel pragmatics, you are a baby killer who can and will turn on this at any moment. So we're going to vaporize you again, and we're going to put that egg in, like, a small lead can.
Just to be safe. They have a big argument over, like, the morals of keeping Rampage in the crew, which ultimately falls to 21 being like, we should just nuke her and drop her into the bottom of the ocean. And BJ just makes the incredibly stupid executive decision of, I want to save her from herself, and therefore we need to figure out what's actually making her do these child kill crimes and try to fix that.
I'm pretty well convinced that the reason is to teach moral lessons.
I'll just lay it straight to you. No matter what you come up with, it's a better idea than what it actually is.
That's reassuring in its own kind of way.
You are inevitably a better writer than Sauber.
Whoever you might be.
you have a better idea than that.
It might be grammatically correct to say that one is a better writer than Sauber.
Mm-hmm.
When one goes to the task of writing, one is, with few exceptions, better at it than Sauber.
Yes. If you're having a bad day, just remember that you're not Sauber, and you never will be. But yeah, so that's a fun moment.
I mean, we've now added to our like catalog of fandom declarations, and it's one of my favorites. I enjoy like a la carte horse pool. No, it's an obvious lie. Like, oh yeah, multiple personalities.
And therefore I'm excused of all my murder crime. Anyways, we get another interstitial of BJ burying Thorn. We then flip to a scene that this whole chapter is very chaotic because of the way it's structured. We flip back to BJ talking to Sakashi, and she's like, hey, I need your burlap sack to bury Thorn in. And also, can you tell me a story and maybe improve my mood a little bit? She tells a long-winded story that's actually kind of fun about a man, about a zebra man who's like, who craved power to become stronger, to protect his tribe, and he prayed to the stars, and the stars are like fickle dark gods in zebra mythology. And he ended up putting his soul in a rock to protect himself from injury. Because as long as the rock wasn't... Like, the rock was a Dorian Gray kind of situation. Like, as long as he, like all of his pain, injury, and old age would just be put into the rock. On to page 2. She relates it in some way to Nightmare Moon and the story of that character. So, for those that are not initiated into the dumb universe of My Little Pony... In the first two episodes, the solar deities, who's also the princess's sister, is become evil after spending 1,000 years trapped on the moon. She became an evil creature called Nightmare Moon. In this story, the explanation behind that is that she prayed, like she got help from the stars. That's actually like it's not important. This is important only for the lore of this story, that the stars are directly connected to this setting. As a way of being evil god things.
Yogg-Sothoth is the key. Yogg-Sothoth is the gate.
Oh, you... Oh, man. So, yeah, there is actually, like, a bunch of Cthulhu shit in the story, by the way. I keep hitting my mic. Yeah, there's a bunch of Elder Mythos stuff in the story. But anyway...
Because of course there is.
Because of course there is. Anyways, another interstitial of BJ burying... fucking skeleton horse shows up and mocks her some more. It's not really relevant, but he's just mean to her again. We get it flips back to chapel. We get a bunch of the jaded crusaders hanging around playing cards, or they're doing like a drinking game or something like that. And all of them are like, "Oh, Thorn bought the farm." And they were all just like guessing that she was going to, like, they all assumed she was going to kill herself because her mother's dead, and like they're used to that sort of thing happening, so they're all just kind of ruminating on this. Again, it's important to remember that these are children that are all like, I've seen too much death in my life. Good old nihilist tots.
Okay, yeah, like the pastor doesn't like keep an eye on like suicide ideated, like, man, there is a lot of spare horses in this world to keep doing all this dying.
Yes. Well, I was going to say, Priest is fucking useless because he's like, oh, I'm not going to stop people from killing themselves. The world is terrible, and I know it. Like, he's fucking useless. He does shit all to, like, help the emotional state of people. Because he just accepts that they're going to kill themselves if they're going to kill themselves, which is fucking terrible.
That's the only function of a pastor. Like, that's the only positive. Like, if he doesn't do that, he literally does nothing.
he's there as a mouth breather, paying lip service to a benevolent god. Okay. We see in transition again to the sort of final shot of BJ doing a grave dig helplessly in the rain. It's kind of neutered as a kind of dark scene. By having the rest of the crew just show up and just like Be like, here, have a shovel. You don't have to be an idiot and like dig in the rain like this. 21, pay some lip service to the concept that like you don't need to like bear the entire brunt of emotional burden, and like we can take some of that emotional like stress as well. Like you don't have to treat everything as your own actions, which I guess that gives 21 something to do, anything to do besides just a moralizing like fucking MGTOW. We get another major bomb drop, and the fact that child that Rampage killed that kicked her out of the Crusaders was her own daughter, because apparently when they were younger she slept with a priest and they had a kid, and then she killed her daughter and then got vaporized by the core for a while, and then just came back as a raider named Rampage, trying to forget her past, I guess. So yeah, that's a thing, I guess. It contributes more to her character, I suppose.
Okay.
I don't know. Fucking who cares? Like, who cares about any of this shit with Rampage? We're not even gotten to the dumb parts. Then we get to Sakashi, and we get to learn a whole bunch of zebra culture lore stuff that's added to this story. It's important to note that in the original story, zebras weren't terribly fleshed out, and in like a later article, like the author like talked about one of their big failings of the story is that like zebras are just kind of like an ominous threat and don't really have like any real character. So people like Somber decided to take that as an open letter to like write their own backstory for zebras. So there's a ton of zebra lore. It's zebra culture is basically kind of just a mush of like pseudo African culture stuff kind of all wrapped together. There's an interesting concept here that like, so I think Somber forgot that colonialism is a thing, and he kind of wrote zebra culture as being like an interesting like Afrocentric culture empire that's like devoid of colonialism in any real way. But like that's confusing because there's an earlier historical part in one of the other parts of the story that talks about the idea that Equestria colonized parts of the Zebran Empire. So like that, those things don't mesh up very well in your lore retelling. But I would like to bitch about the concept of like the idea of like an Afrocentric empire that like has a completely different set of culture and technology and all that stuff is really interesting. But nothing is done with it. It's all window dressing. It's all just lore with no substance.
Just so many memory orbs.
Yep.
I don't think we've ever talked about it on the podcast before, but me and Fi have talked in the past about lore guffins. the idea. So Hitchcock defined a MacGuffin as chiefly, it's the thing that the spies care about, but the audience could not give a shit about. That's what a MacGuffin is. It's a thing that is very important to the people who exist in the story, but really almost can't hold the interest of the audience on its own.
Yeah, it, like the Ring in Lord of the Rings is another perfect example of a MacGuffin.
Nerds are super into like pointless lore, and so many would be. Writers like grognards who want to create something of their own, they get really caught up in all this complicated lore, forgetting that without characters that you're invested in and care about directly interacting with it, like unless it impacts your story in some way, the audience isn't capable of giving a shit about your 12 kinds of elf.
Yes. Like in this story, there's 13 tribes of zebras. We meet three in this story. How am I supposed to care about those other 10? The only ones that matter are the ones that worship stars. That's all you need to know. In this context, the only interesting thing that permeates the story is a thing from K-Cat's story, which is the idea that zebra magic works on a fundamentally different level than equestrian magic. Since equestrian magic is all spells and magic, unicorn magic and shit, zebra magic is all fetishes, potions, poultices, and magic talismans. They have to like physically work magic into objects using crystals and materials and all sorts of other things. This is only it's an interesting concept because it explains how there's like magic water talismans and magic cloaking technology and all the like sufficiently advanced magic technology in the setting mostly is zebra technology. that's been like reverse engineered from Equestria. The only other important detail about this is the fact that the reason the war happened was initially a resource thing. Zebrakins needed crystals that Equestria had, and Equestria needed the coal that Zebrakins had because they needed it for their industrialization. This leads into a whole bunch of political conflict, and they go to war over dumb bullshit. Sombra expands this into this giant political scene that just does not matter. Like, it's supposed to be a thing where it's running coterminously, parallel to the story of Project Horizons, but like, it doesn't matter. None of this matters. Like, we don't, like, okay, Golden Blood was behind it all. Bingo, bango, bongo. It's done. You don't need this big invested like lore that actually contributes nothing. It's the kind of lore too that like a nerd would go, but actually they needed to know what this thing was or they wouldn't be able to solve the problems. Like, yeah, but like you didn't need to write 10 paragraphs of lore about it either. Like, the writer ultimately writes the story. Like, it's not like the characters are just a byproduct of that as well, and so is the lore. It's really, really bad. It really sucks. I really, really don't like the backstory stuff in PH. It's very distracting and terrible, and I have to jot it all down for this podcast because otherwise nothing makes sense.
You have to prove it to the audience.
Well, there's also no context otherwise. Like, oh, like, why is it bad that zebras are portrayed as being sort of African coded, and why that's kind of racist is like contextless if you don't understand the sheer amount of like blind writing, like the thoughtless kind of writing that's behind it is terrible.
I mean, okay, so I'm going to do something controversial. I'm going to defend Sombra right now. I'm going to make a case for Sombra. No one is paying him to do this.
Yeah,
this is the result of like, I'm sure that there are like mountains of like notes and like go nowhere prose in like Neil Gaiman's desk. This is a passion project. Sombra is writing this because it is fun for Sombra to do. I can't, like, no one can blame him for like, especially if this is like he's fairly new to it. It's hard to blame him for not having the discipline to know what not to publish.
Yeah, but like, I guess that falls away a little bit when you know that like this story had like 8 editors.
Yeah, no, okay. It is totally the fault of those 8 editors to not have the good goddamn sense to like say, yeah, none of this is relevant to the story. None of this.
You need an editor to rein you in, and none of them did that. Like, I can only imagine them as sycophantic yes men.
We've sort of established before that they're all fucking copy editors.
They're just looking for grammatic and spelling errors. But anyways, I guess we should press on. BJ and 21 chat for a while in the next scene after they've buried Thorn about what their plans actually are. So the plan is that they're going to basically establish a coup in Stable 99, like they're going to take it over and make it right. They're gonna eliminate all the leader's estate and make everything work better in Stable 99 and fix it so that they don't feel guilty when they have to leave again to go like find this ping-ponging program.
So they bringing a coalition of child soldiers to help Strongarm this process along, like.
They just kind of bring their own, they've got their little crew, and they're more than a match for anything that's in the stable.
Well, but if there's, like, what, the 5 of them or something? Like, in order to, like, make a conquest or reconquest stick, you need an occupying force.
Yeah, but, like, again.
Whoops. Okay.
Yeah.
No.
Who cares? They talk a little bit about Unity and what it is in the story. So, Unity, as far as they can gather, is some kind of religion. They've been asking around to different people. It's some kind of newfangled religion that proselytizes the notion that we're all one. We're all one people, and we need to all come together to save the wastes. And the way we're going to do that is we've got these alicorns who are all, you know, the manifest of the goddess themselves, and the goddess is some
Unitarian communists.
I wish.
No, no, not communists. Communists.
Yeah.
Communists. Whatever John Tron hilariously complained about that one time. Yeah, communists.
Yeah, it was communists.
Yeah, these, like, it sounds to me, I predict we're going to come face to face with the vile communists.
And they worry a little bit about Lacuna, because they're just like, oh, we don't know what her motives really are. Oh, then BJ has a bunch of dreams that don't matter because they're just a bunch of symbolism. Well, dreams in stories are always tricky because it's hard not to just like it's hard to write surreal feeling experiences. They're way better for a visual medium, but they happen so common in the story, and a lot of them are just reiterating points that we've already seen. Since a lot of it is just like the skeleton being like,
we need to take a laughing skeleton break. Our protagonist has to have a skeleton laugh at them a little bit. Some more.
He's just like, look what you did, and he just draws a bunch of cards that'll have mean faces of all the people she's killed. There is admittedly a really cool kind of, there is at least one of the Tulip Dreams is kind of interesting from a surrealist perspective, in which she's like flying with the ghoul horse, and when she like looks down, like the entire landscape is all the bodies that she's accrued over the course of the story, and that's kind of like a cool like visual image, but again it's like toothless because like we've already seen this song and dance so many times.
The
so
theme
far.
From Neverending Story is like can't not play in my head as you describe that, like hand in hand with a zombie flying.
That's so dark. I love it.
I wish I could remember the lyrics. I just remember the da 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 dream.
Perfect. Print it. Anyways, BJ is pretty rattled from her nightmarescape, so that to take the edge off, she decides to imbibe in some more memory orb. Proving once again that BJ is a memory orb addict. Anyways, with the familiar visual cue that we're in a memory orb. So this memory orb is complicated to talk about if you know the spoilers, but I'm gonna read it out as thus. We're in the body of an astronaut that's about to go into space, and she's contacted by the Ministry of Peace, Fluttershy's ministry, and is told, hey, we can guarantee something that she needs. We're going to take a baby from a particular member of the government that it would be really important for them to not have a child. We're going to take that child and teleport it into your uterus, and you'll carry to term instead. And then that child will be delivered into orphan care. It's incredibly complicated.
Convoluted, I think, is the better.
Yes, that's the word. But yeah, so an astronaut carries a baby for a government official that is remained nameless for this scene. Because it would destroy their career. Having a moment there, weird.
Captain, your next mission is of the strictest confidence. I'm ready, Commander. What? Well, don't get too excited. It's, you're grounded, but you said,
it's a ridiculous 80s plot. This astronaut has to take care of a baby that's been magically teleported into their uterus. This is part of that shark jump moment I've been mentioning for several chapters now. We move on from that.
But sir, why an astronaut? Who else has the discretion of an astronaut? They've hidden our fake moon landing long enough, haven't they?
There is actually a talk about the concept of the moon landing. Like, people think that the moon landing was faked in this story, which is just a weird moment.
Yes, and thus the astronauts' reputation for their extraordinary discretion. You cannot pry a secret out of an astronaut. It just doesn't work.
This is the dumbest story. But we gotta press on.
Pony NASA is a purely a propaganda front. Therefore,
The average astronaut has very little knowledge of how to operate an aircraft, but every technique for keeping a secret.
Honestly, I'm surprised that's not the case in this story, given how much subterfuge is in the story. But anyways, we gotta press on to some degree. So, BJ wakes up the smell of Glory apparently cooking something awful on the stove.
Y'all like grits? Oh, no, I mean, dark grits.
Fallen grits. Disgraced grits. Punished grits.
These are the grits of the penitent.
But Lacuna decided to hang back because she's like, I don't trust whatever she's cooking. It's moving kind of moments.
Oh, so it's Boudin.
BJ has a discussion with the soft-spoken large horse. She talks about the goddess and kind of needles her on like what's going on with Unity. Apparently, Alicorns, I think I've talked about this before, but Alicorns are all under like a complicated hive mind. They're all connected to the goddess, and they make up like a giant brain collective.
But so only
yes.
Cognitively manifestations of the goddess? Is there like, I'm just stuck on, once again, we need to get this program to somebody who like it can be cast upon. We've got a shard of divinity here, like that can't be that far genetically dissimilar from the other shards of divinity.
Yeah, I'll pop that bubble a little bit. That's not how the goddesses work at all. They're like a genetic. They're not related to the princesses in any way. It's dumb and stupid and complicated. And at some point I'm gonna have to explain it because it's not in this story that's explained very well. It's actually from the original story. Like the goddess stuff is all from the original story. But they're all a hive mind. They all answer to a goddess. Who is the sum total of all of their knowledge slammed into one character, in one entity. There's a discussion a little bit about soul jars, the notion of like, BJ asked about like, how can you put a soul on a rock? And like, Lacuna is like, oh, it's actually like more common than you think. There's a bunch of stuff out there in the waste that's just like people have put their soul into a thing and it makes it, gives it different properties and usually makes it indestructible and live forever is usually the quality of a soul jar. But, that sort of technology has been lost, and there's a single book out there that might be able to like give that information, and that's kind of what the goddess is looking for. But when BJ needles Lacuna more about it, the goddess kind of like overshadows Lacuna and like speaks in this like rapturous, intense voice. And he's like, "Oh, yours is not to question. I'm God, basically." But like she can't stay in Lacuna's body for very long because the way that the hoof works, it psychically screams into her brain at all times. And Lacuna can only take it because she's some kind of like aberrant mutant. So it's the reason why she has like an identity outside of the goddess. Like normally the goddess are like a pure hive mind. There's no difference between any one Alicorn in the hive mind. Except for Lacuna has an identity because of this. There's something wrong with her.
And that wrongness, being an original character, did not steal.
She is Donut Steel.
Donut Steel. Hero of the Waste. Yeah.
No, you can't take Lacuna away from me. I love my giant gothic Lolita horse. Oh, Cat Watson. Anyways, there's kind of like
Cat
an
wants
off...
Out.
Off
Well, there, there's Cat wants in again.
there's an offbeat gag of Glory not being a very good cook, but BJ having kind of a mutant sense of taste and stomach and can like eat like anything despite how disgusting and horrible it is. All right, we fast forward really quick. They're now flying on Ghoul Pony Express, I guess. They're flying over the airport. When they get jumped, I think. They get jumped by, I think, either Enclave ponies or some other faction. They just get lasered at. So they have to, like, crash land at the airport and tell Ditzy Doo to just bail so that she doesn't get herself killed for their whatever dumb thing's happening to them. So they hang out at the airport, which is mostly an excuse to the fact that, if you remember from, like, a couple of chapters ago, Deus gave his access codes to his locker. So they crack open his locker. They crack open
and
locker.
It explodes, killing them all because this is his final vengeance. Why would he?
I wish. this is where we learn that his name is Doof, which is short for Doofus. In his locker contains more memory orbs, a grenade launcher called Persuasion, and a little like note that says Twist and Doof and like a little heart like thing. But yeah, then they wander through the airport a little bit to see if they can scavenge anything while they're there to kind of like hide from things. They get attacked by Manticores, which are giant. They're from the original show, but they're like a giant mutant monster hybrid thing. They're like a lion with a like scorpion tail, basically, with wings. They're very ferocious in this setting. The only thing that really matters in this scene is that BJ and Rampage are kind of like bickering at each other during the fight childishly, and 21 just gets pissy with them. He's like, asserts himself as the only adult in the room, which I mean is worrying for other reasons. Christ. BJ has more guilt hallucinations about Skeleton Horse that she starts rambling at while she's with the rest of the crew, which prompts 21 of the crew to go, wait, who are you talking to? And she fills in the rest of the crew that she's seeing Skeleton Horse.
Oh yeah, for months now this skeleton's been laughing at me. It's not... I'm fine.
It's no big deal.
I'm fine. It's healthy.
I've taken care of it. I am mentally stable. It's just a skeleton horse is around. Don't you have a skeleton horse? Seems weirder to me that you don't have a skeleton horse. 21 kind of randomly rambles about how great Blackjack is again. Because, like, there's a... Like, I forgot how often 21, like, dryly recitates just events that had happened in the story previously. And how, like, BJ's so brave and courageous for facing up to them. And it's just like... Like, are you reading the same story as I am, 21? Like, a lot of people just, like, died, mostly through BJ's incompetence.
Is horse pull still in the form of a baby, or have they grown out of it?
Yes, she is a small child still. She's a small murder child. It'll take her a couple of weeks to grow back up into regular Rampage, a regular horse pull. But yeah, they manage to sneak out of the building to do some recon on the Manticores, and they find a weird, horribly mutated, like, half-pony, half-Manticore person who's somehow controlling the Manticores, and they do her bidding. And she's probably related to Sanguine, the current story's, like, antagonist in some way. They ruminate. They're like, okay, we need to get out of here, if only we could teleport. And Lacuna's like, oh, I can teleport. And they're like, oh, why didn't you do that before? It's like, well, normally I need a lot more radiation than we're normally exposed to do that. But we happen to be near like a blast area, so I can do that. And the only other important thing we get is like more filling in.
Are you telling me you could have teleported us out at any time? Not at any time. Only when it's convenient.
Yeah, she Roger Rabbits them. The only other real important thing of this scene is we get a bunch of photos in a service box, like one of those boxes when like a military person is KIA and they just kind of like send their like mementos. It's a bunch of like photos and stuff of one of the other Marauders named Twist, who's like a character from the original show named fucking what? Peppermint Twist, I think was her name. She grew up to be a military officer, I guess. It's not really important yet, but it will be later, so that's why I'm bringing her up now. But yeah, and then the scene ends with Lacuna.
I look forward to hearing more of Sergeant Pepper and her Lonely Hearts Club Band.
And the scene ends with Lacuna teleporting the crew back to Chapel. Oh, Christ, we're almost done this chapter, then we can do like some notes and some.
Oh, I get it. That okay. She can only use it in a dungeon instance. That's
yes. Logic. Yeah, she can rope trick her way out, but she can't use it on open. She can't fast travel overworld. She doesn't have that power yet.
Great.
It's also important to note, I believe she's the wrong kind of Alucard to do this, but no one, that won't make sense until later. Anyways, they bounce back to Chapel, where we get a big long scene where they're basically like, man, we can't go by land, and Charity's like, well, that's silly. Why didn't you just go by boat? And they're like, there's a boat? Because, you know, the hoof is separated by twin rivers, so of course there's a boat. And it just so happens that the boat is docked right now, so they can go right now to get on the boat. They meet up with a ragtag crew of totally not pirates on a ship called the Seahorse. They're actually like decently fun because they're like the gimmick of the main the captain of it is the Captain Thrush is that she's basically just Blackjack without all the fucking baggage of being like a rapist bash pony.
I'm also amused by the name of their ship, the Seaman.
I don't think they're thinking it in that context. But we get a bunch of interaction with Thrush. It's not terribly important. It's just kind of like I like her. I think she's fun. Her and her crew are spunky. They're
so
a nice
to speak aboard the Seaman. Don't the Seaman is very slippery. So like, make sure to really plant your feet when stepping.
Yeah, it's terrible. It's a dumb, goofy thing. But yeah, so next chapter, they're going to be taking a boat for like four chapters because they've got a lot of
the voyages of the Seaman.
Yes, the voyage of the Seaman. These are the adventures of the starship Seaman. Captain Thrush and tar boots, and just like cool in it for themselves pirates, who feel like they walked out of a different story. and the chapter kind of ends with like a 21 going like, oh god, there's two of them, and having a meltdown moment as the straight man only can. But yeah, that's our chapter. Next, like I said, next week it's going to be boat adventures for a little while before they ever get to Stable 99. So that's what we're looking forward to for the next like four chapters. Yay, pirate adventure.
Like, is the sea
on the Seaman
still water? Like, are they?
Yeah, it's water. There's still water. It's not Mad Max.
Okay, that's the impression I got. Like, I'm really surprised that like Stable 99 is next to a coast.
Well, it's not, but it can take them a distance away. Like,
all right,
it's safer, I guess, than traveling by hoof.
Gosh, I sure hope the new bad guy doesn't have a sea themed general, and no oceanic. Yes.
yeah, doesn't have his,
wouldn't that just be inevitable? I mean,
yes.
Terrible.
So do we, you got any like wrap up notes before we do the end, on this particular chapter? Since we've got plenty of time to just vent if we want.
I'm really excited to, stubbornly refuse to believe any future information about Rampage.
Yes.
Because at this point, I am fully convinced that it's Alucard, like the Team Four Star depiction of Alucard. This is a near a flesh monster with like limited omniscience, like a insane indestructible shapeshifter who is just fucking with these assholes.
Who just does not care. just does not give the slightest shit. That would be a really fun character. And I wish it was.
And that is why we are insistently, why I am insistently holding to that narrative. It is a raft I am clinging to.
Yeah, there's a lot of rafts. For me, it's Lacuna. Luckily, mine's a big horse that I guess floats. I got myself covered. You've got the a float made of denial. That's how you're keeping
yes!
a raft.
It is exquisite. But only a half as exquisite a ship as the Seaman.
And I feel like I want to like make like I guess one last final point about zebra stuff before we go is that like I've glossed over it quite a bit because like it's really tedious and unimportant to like know every fine detail about it. But like it's always important to remember, like always keep in the back of your brain that like zebras are supposed to be basically black coated, like very very Africanized. So like. A lot of the bullshit that is in the story is very inexcusable in the context of zebras. Like, zebras are incredibly loyalty-driven and fucked up.
Not the least of which we've already established, based on everything we've like been told about them so far, is that they're Islamicists. They're irrational, savage, devotion-driven
Islamicists
who are totally deaf to logic and reason of the grandeur of the Pony West.
It's always important to keep in mind that like zebras are incredibly like African-coded, but then, like, religiously... I was going to say Middle Eastern, but that's not correct. Like, they're Muslim, yeah, no, so they're basically, Northern African.
You don't fully understand the reactionary mind, Fi. You see, they're Moors.
Yeah, you're not wrong. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's always needs to be stressed and hammered home, that, like, this is really racist and, like, is
behoofed
terrible
Moors.
Reading. And it's also, like, a holder from the original story. Like, that's one of the sort of, like, FOE is still pretty problematic as a fave, is that there's a bunch of shit that's like, I don't know about that, Chief. And one of the biggest cases of it is zebras are just, like, terrible. But, like, I get it. They're in the original two seasons, there was no real other villains you could really, like, dwell upon. Like, there was no other you could potentially do. But, like, it's the problem of, again, it's not a story in a vacuum. So a lot of these implications become very obvious and clear. And
I mean, they could have leaned into the idea of, like, Discordians,
yeah,
and, like, had the big bad be, like, just straight up Red Scare, turn of the 19th century anarchists. But I guess that's a little bit too reactionary classic for a very modern
it would also be a
mind,
lot
like
it,
somber
yeah that these it's also important to remember these people have, like, no context of history. Like, their only touch of the understanding of Red Scare is the, like, is Fallout 3, which is toothless. I'm saying toothless a lot, but I'm a big fan of the word toothless in this context.
Teeth are strong. Teeth are a sign of strength and intellectual vitality. I'm on board for it.
Yes, teeth gang. But yeah, I don't know. I always want to stress and strain that, like, that Somber puts so much work into trying to make zebras more complex feeling, but also trying to justify why they A, need to be exterminated, and B, why they could not be reasoned with. So their entire culture is, like, very militaristic, imperialistic, and very Muslim.
Oh God, yeah. Now it just occurred to me that, like, that is just the, like, minimal friction slide. Like, that's sort of the inevitable place, like, a reactionary would go, is that, like, they don't understand the Red Scare because they weren't born in it. Like, they only have, like, the like, ashen remnants of, like, Jordan Peterson's appeals to it. But the enemy, the monolithic enemy that they do understand is the Islamic world.
The impassible, implacable, unreasonable, terrorist country that is Muslims? That is Islam?
Every Muslim country, save for Syria. They're the good folk over there.
Oh, and Saudi Arabia. Don't forget about that.
I might have been the... Anyway, yeah.
don't forget about capitalist interests.
I crave your reviews like memories.
Yes.
Take your memory of these experiences and put it in an orb, and then put that... You know what? Actually, you know what's easier? Just write us a comment.
Just tweet at me.
Click all the thumbs ups. Click all the hearts and stars. It'll greatly increase our impact on the various media, podcasting, sharing sites, and YouTube, so that more people can find out about the product. Tweet at Thou Art Fi.
We should probably also work on getting, like, a Gmail account specifically for this, just so people can send, like...
Yeah, we want to hear from you. We want to know what's been annoying you about our show. We want to know what you've liked about the show.
Things you'd like to see better clarified by me instead of just glossed over.
Because if you don't give us your feedback, if you don't tell us what you're thinking, we might start to think that this was all just a terrible mistake.